Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Roasted or deep-fried turkey. Cranberry relish or cranberry jelly from a can. I'm May Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us for our pre-Thanksgiving cooking show. Today, we'll share recipes, favorite dishes, and answer your cooking questions in the hopes of making your holiday spread something to really be thankful for this year. We have two distinguished chefs to share their culinary knowledge and passion. Here in our Richmond studio, our cookbook author and food writer, Kendra Bailey Morris. You may also know Kendra as host of Heart of the Home, a cooking segment on the Virginia Farm Bureau's weekly television program, Real Virginia. Also with us today is Patrick Eamon, who's the executive banquet chef of Richmond's historic Jefferson Hotel and executive chef of TJ's, a restaurant at the hotel as well. Welcome to you both.
Good morning, May Lily.
Good morning.
Okay,
thank you.
Who brought the wine?
I haven't started yet.
It's in my purse.
I heard wine is the best cover-up for any faux pas in the kitchen.
Absolutely.
Let me see that help.
Patrick, I'm going to start with you because you have quite a task during Thanksgiving. In fact, folks wait 3 months to get on that Thanksgiving list at the Jefferson.
Oh, yeah. We're filled up in all the restaurants as well as brunch. We're excited. We've already started prepping. We received this week close to 5,000 pounds of turkey, but that includes about 4,000 that go to our employees from our generous owners. But
how many people show up?
We do 500 on brunch, and see, we serve all day since we're full service, so we'll do about 180 for breakfast, and then Le Maire will do a mid-morning one that'll do probably close to 200, and then TJ's will do an evening one, which will do about 150. So somewhere over 1,000 people.
So reservations are made as early as 3 months ahead, and you have how many people on your waiting list right now just to get in on your Thanksgiving dinner?
Probably 150, just in brunch, but then each restaurant keeps a separate waiting list. So
now here's what I find fascinating, and it's not just a Southern thing. People do not want you to vacillate from the traditional, no curry in my dressing.
That's true. You know, I first started doing banquets at TJ's probably 11 years ago, and I can remember the first couple holidays trying to, you know, be innovative with holiday classics and throwing out maybe smoke on this or, as you said, like curry or some sort of like exotic flavor with something, and it just did not go well. I was having to make, you know, sweet potatoes and cranberry relish just straight up in the middle of service just because you have so many people that really find comfort in their holiday classics. And so now we really work on taking pride in doing those classics the best way possible and making sure that every plate goes out, you know, is the same every year and just super high quality and lets you enjoy your family because that's really – even coming to the hotel – that's what it's about, is being able to enjoy that food, but really focus on your family.
What about you, Kendra? What will happen this year? Any surprises?
Well, I am actually going to someone else's house for Thanksgiving. So that's a big surprise. I'm really excited about that. No, we are actually – kind of the way our family does it is we all convene in one house. And, you know, we share the responsibility. We have whoever's the host usually does the turkey. And then we have, you know, everyone bring their own dish. So I think I'm going to be doing some corn pudding. That's going to be my big contribution.
Nice. What about cooking it in the slow cooker?
You can do corn pudding in the slow cooker. I actually have a recipe in my book, The Southern Slow Cooker, for corn pudding. Surprisingly, you can do it in the slow cooker.
It's amazing all the things I look through that you can do in the slow cooker. You make desserts in a slow cooker.
Yep, desserts. Yeah, I have several. I have a whole section on desserts you can do in the slow cooker. I have a
cakes, cheesecakes,
chocolates, buttermilk chocolate spice cake, which is surprisingly good. I have a upside down ginger snap peach cake that you can do. Of course, bread pudding. A lot of people do bread pudding. That's very popular. And cheesecake. Yeah, cheesecake in I've actually bake them in ball jars. So they're individual cheesecakes. It's a chocolate banana cheesecake baked in ball jars in a water bath in the slow cooker.
It's a great idea.
Let's start with the centerpiece, the turkey. Mm-hmm. And of course, especially around these parts, a lot of people like to deep fry. So let's talk about roasting versus deep frying.
Oh, my goodness. The turkey is the great conundrum for me because you have so many different things can happen with the turkey. You know, you have the white meat, which ideally is like, you know, 145, and then dark meat has to be cooked to 165 to get tender. Then you want a crispy skin but a moist interior. So it's all these juxtapositions of flavors and textures that you're trying to hit at the same time.
Therein lies the dilemma of
exactly.
The turkey.
Exactly. So, yeah, I love a fried turkey, too.
Is this dilemma the reason that we eat chicken all the time and we hardly ever have turkey?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And
the size.
Jinx.
Buy me Coke.
Don't jinx each other. I need to talk to you guys.
Somebody has to say my name.
So the deep frying, what is that all about? I would never even attempt that. I'm barely confident roasting one.
I think the appeal of the deep fried turkey, at least from my perspective, is it really just crisps that skin in such an amazing way. I mean, you just want to break pieces off and just eat it. Oh, God, it's just so good. But then, of course, the interior is really, really juicy. And a lot of people now can go ahead and buy those deep fryers. And so it's virtually foolproof. Some folks brine ahead of time. Some folks don't. I think either way works pretty well. I think brining adds, obviously, a lot of flavor and helps to break down the meat a little bit more to make it more tender when you do fry it. But frying is probably my favorite way to eat it just because that really amazingly crispy outer coating is just irresistible.
I think it's also an excuse to sit outside and drink beer.
That's true.
So I think it becomes like a kind byproduct. Of a family tradition as far as like the whole day has something to do. You know, you've got your football and mm-hmm. hanging out and getting the turkey ready. And then I think there's a lot that goes into being able to inject a turkey with flavoring and take that larger piece of meat, especially if you're not familiar with really brining a lot, then that's just an easy way to put in a lot of flavor into a turkey.
But then I understand that these deep fryers are addicting. One Papa now fries everything.
Wow.
The celery, the cauliflower, the Oreos. Yeah, he's gotten quite carried away.
Well, it's almost like once you spend all that money on the oil, you might as well use it.
Well, and the cleanup.
And the cleanup.
That's
exactly.
Gotta be great.
Exactly.
So, I did read that now you can donate your oil, at least here in Richmond.
That's true.
To turn it into biofuel, which I thought was kind of cool.
I love that.
Yeah.
Now, help me clarify, what is the difference between stuffing and dressing?
Well, I know I grew up having dressing. Dressing is in the casserole, just right? You agree with me on that?
I would agree with you on
in
that.
In the Richmond area.
I'm originally from West Virginia, yes. So, but I grew up in Richmond for the most part. So I claim both sides because I spent as much time in West Virginia up in the mountains where my family's from in the Bluefield area as I did in Virginia. And we never stuffed the turkey. It was just something, which is the stuffing, I would say. People argue it's stuffed in there. I really, again, going back to that idea of crispiness, I love the crispy edges of the dressing when it's in a casserole dish. And my grandmother always, she would actually make stuffing cups, which are basically like, or stuffing muffins. You make them in a muffin tin and you have this whole little individual piece and all the edges are crispy all the way around. And then the stuffing is like nice and moist and delicious on the inside. And it's totally irresistible. And they're great too, because you can make them ahead.
Oh, that's a great solution.
Yeah, it's really, really good stuff.
I would say that the difference between a stuffing and a dressing is a dressing doesn't always have a bread component. Like I know that a lot of people will use like a grain like rice or rice and sausage or something like that and add that into the turkey. So I think that you could still have a stuffing on the outside, but I think that a lot of us have gotten away from stuffing inside the turkey because you have to raise the internal temperature of the turkey so much to get that stuffing cooked. They end up with a dry turkey just to have a moist stuffing.
That's true.
So I know I grew up on a smoked turkey in one of those big green eggs, and so there wasn't a lot of stuffing going on in there. It was always something on the side. So,
what about those who are vegans? Michelle from Charlottesville has a question pertaining to some of those special needs. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
Hello?
What is your – yes, you're a vegan, right?
Yes, yes. Kind of a very new vegan, so I'm just curious, you know, how I can, you know, participate in Thanksgiving, you know, with some cruelty-free dishes.
Okay, participate or actually prepare some dishes for other guests who are also vegan?
Oh, prepare other dishes. Yeah, prepare other dishes for people.
Great, thanks so much.
Excellent. Well, if you're going to do just a vegan turkey and you're concerned about having a substitute for the turkey, I prefer not to use the meat substitutes. I kind of stick more with things that are give you a similar nutritional value. So my favorite vegan kind of meat substitute is tempeh right now. And so
I really like tempeh.
Yeah.
And I'm a Southern girl to the core on meat and fat back all the way. And I really like tempeh.
There's a lot that you can do with it. You can braise it. You want a long cook tempeh, from what I understand, to get the full nutritional value out of it. And so a lot of times what we'll do is stew it kind of fricassee style with mushrooms and vegetable stock, flour, and you can even add a smoke component to it if you were kind of missing that grill flavor from the turkey. And that's one of mine. Now, to get a complete protein profile, though, you would want to add a grain back to that. So you would probably also want to do some sort of wild rice or barley or something like that. And then I'd focus on all the sides and just make really fantastic sides, which is really easy to do, I think, on Thanksgiving.
I was already thinking like a butternut squash soup.
Sure.
And substituting vegetable stock and apples, maybe some apple cider in it.
Mm-hmm. Coconut milk.
Absolutely, coconut milk in it. And that's just hearty and delicious and healthy. Mm-hmm. And vegan.
Not only are folks observing a vegetarian or vegan diet, but many folks are gluten-free now. And gravy, unfortunately, has that flour in it. But you can use some substitutes instead of gravy, right? Like cornstarch? Instead of flour in the gravy.
You can definitely use cornstarch.
I know some people use the rice flour a lot and cornmeal mixtures. I mean, the cornmeal could be a little bit tricky with the texturally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But I know there's a lot of gluten-free thickeners out there that you can buy pretty much in any grocery store that you can use as a substitute for the flour.
People are using arrowroot powder.
Arrowroot,
right.
That's
at
a good
one. The hotel, we almost exclusively thicken with cornstarch because not only do you get a better mouthfeel, because all of them have different kind of gelling effects. Like with arrowroot, you get kind of almost I don't want to say slimy, but it's not a great mouthfeel. Cornstarch is probably closest to flour. It's going to give you a clearer finish on it, but it also is not going to get a skin, which is an advantage of not using flour. So
thanks, Michelle, for that question. From Roanoke, we have Ellen. Good morning to you, Ellen.
Yes.
Hey, good morning, Ellen.
Good morning.
Are you getting hungry just listening to us?
Well, I just ate breakfast, so no. I have a dilemma that's come up recently. I was planning to travel out of state to a town where we know a lot of people and we're invited for Thanksgiving, but due to some unforeseen circumstances, we are suddenly hosting Thanksgiving. And the stove that I use in our vacation home, the oven has never browned well. I've had it checked. The thermostat is accurate, but things just don't get brown. So I'm not worried about the turkey cooking fully. I can have a meat thermometer and check that, but I'm not sure how I'm going to get it nice and golden brown. Any suggestions?
I have a couple.
Okay.
For one, brining the turkey, even though it adds moisture to the interior meat, it actually has the ability to kind of dry the skin. Another thing that you can do is, and you have to be careful with this because too much will actually make it black, but if you add a little sugar to your brine, that'll help the skin caramelize.
Ah,
secondly, you might be overcrowding your oven. If you're trying to bake all the things at once in there, you're probably adding moisture to it. If you have like an open stuffing in there, it's evaporating moisture and keeping the skin from crisping. So if you do have to do it like that, because that's just the only way to get it done, then consider basting it, which will also help brown it, or even quick searing it. Or even a lot of people now, when they cook sous vide, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's basically in a sealed environment.
Uh-huh.
Like almost in a bag, boil in a bag. They'll cook meats, and they'll actually use a blowtorch on the end.
Oh.
Now, you have to be careful.
That would be entertaining.
you have to definitely, you know, hold it far back, but you can use a torch to brown things.
What about a convection oven? Could she use one?
If she had that.
Yeah, absolutely.
No,
convection
it's a regular
oven.
Electric, nothing fancy.
Yeah, right. Well, we wondered if maybe you'd want to invest in one.
no, not for this.
Yet another one would be investing in a heavy-bottomed pan, such as a cast iron, and cooking the turkey three-quarters of the way skin breast side down.
That's definitely it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I could do that. Okay, Ellen, well, I will try some of those and keep my fingers crossed.
Yeah, good luck.
Ellen, I'm just going to throw out one other suggestion, and that is probably the local Holiday Inn has a banquet you can go to.
The closest motel is about 70 miles away.
Thanks for your call.
But, okay, thank you.
Good luck with Thanksgiving. There are these other ways of cooking things besides using the oven. I think that's a great point, that if one wants to do lots of different cooking all at once, there are all these other tools at one's disposal besides that oven.
Right, right.
Oh, I will have to say slow cooker.
Definitely.
Right on.
Absolutely, the slow cooker. I know more and more people are starting to use their slow cooker when entertaining at Thanksgiving because, you know, just as our caller mentioned, a lot of times you have the turkey taking up all the space in the oven, and you still have all these other elements that have to come together to have a successful dinner. And, you know, timing is everything. You want everything to go on the table at the same time. So having one or even two slow cookers is a great idea because you can make a lot of different side dishes in there. You can make, like I said, the corn pudding. You can make items like kale. You can even make stuffing in the slow cooker. And this way you can free up your oven and everything will come together at the same time. So it's a great appliance that way.
Kendra Bailey Morris is the author of The Southern Slow Cooker, a great reference for this type of cooking. You know, we talked about gravy earlier, and I think one of the dilemmas around people who are novices at making a gravy are, oh, it's lumpy gravy. How do you get the lumps out of the gravy?
Whisk.
I grew up on white gravy, too, which is a little bit more non-traditional. Most people like to do the brown gravy, and the brown gravy is great. And I guess the principles kind of apply the same. But
can you talk about the difference between the two?
Yeah, one has milk, and one usually has chicken stock or drippings or some combination therein. And the milk-based gravy is basically your drippings, and then instead of whisking some sort of a stock or flavoring in that way, you just use whole milk. Or canned milk, like we used to do up in the mountains, because whole milk wasn't always readily available, so you just use the canned milk. And it's really rich, and it's really decadent, and you season it with lots and lots of black pepper. You know, it's what goes over the biscuits, too, you know, so it does some double time there.
I think some also differences is using a dark roux as opposed to a white roux. And actually, your slow cooker would be awesome for doing a dark roux because you could add the fat and the flour and let it go slow, and that way you can control the darkness that you would want to get.
That's a great idea.
And that's how I prefer to do it. So
we're talking with Patrick Eamon, executive banquet chef of Richmond's historic Jefferson Hotel, as well as executive chef of TJ's. And we're talking with Kendra Bailey Morris, who is a cookbook author and food writer. You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Next week, as we move into the holiday shopping season, we take a peek into the brain and how it subconsciously guides our purchases. That's on the next edition of Virginia Conversations. Do stay with us because after this break, we'll be back with more about the Thanksgiving kitchen. Welcome back to Virginia Conversations. Today we're sharing Thanksgiving recipes and cooking tips. Our guests are cookbook author and food writer Kendra Bailey Morris. Kendra is also a regular on the Virginia Farm Bureau's weekly television program, Real Virginia. And we're also joined by Patrick Eamon, executive banquet chef of Richmond's historic Jefferson Hotel and executive chef at TJ's. All right, some other faux pas are the pumpkin pie that cracks. You know, you and I were talking earlier, Kendra, about how you just don't like it when your cheesecake starts cracking.
Yeah.
Which is why you moved to the slow cooker.
Absolutely. I found that making cheesecake in the slow cooker helps to prevent that because you're cooking it in that water bath. I know that's always an issue when it's pumpkin pie or chess pie or whatever, they're going to end up cracking. And of course, you know, there's always the one rule of thumb, which is like, go ahead and make some whipped cream and dump it on top and you're fine. Nobody will ever see it. And more wine for the gang. And it's like, it's great.
Excellent. Slow and low.
Yeah.
That's the way to go.
All right. I also want to talk about this because I have a Pavlovian reaction to cranberry in a can right around this time of year. I love it and I cannot get enough of it. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Nothing wrong with it.
You just backed away.
I did. Do you slice it or do you leave the ridges in it on the platter in the can?
I like those slices.
The slices?
There's some connection delicious. There that makes
it must be a.
So.
Is it a childhood connection?
Yeah,
because that's
definitely.
Usually what it is. Exactly.
I think it was hard to get cranberries, fresh cranberries and frozen cranberries when we were growing up. So that was at least where I was.
Me too.
Well, then talk to us about your cranberry relishes. What do you like to do?
One of the ways I really love to make it is to add just a little splash of Grand Marnier in there. And that fancies it up a little bit. And it really adds a nice flavor. And obviously, when you're cooking it down, a lot of the alcohol cooks off of it. So you're left with just this really unique orange flavoring in there and maybe a little orange zest thrown in there as a bonus. It's good stuff.
Yeah, I kind of like it either two ways. I have a Texas background. So sometimes I'll do it with, you know, citrus and jalapeno and sugar, apple cider vinegar, and cook that down. But then I also really like it kind of as a chutney where, you know, you're cooking it down with brown sugar, port wine, cinnamon, mace, clove, all those really kind of traditional Thanksgiving flavors. So
that sounds great.
That sounds really good.
Laura from Christiansburg, good morning to you. How are you this morning? And what is your question, Laura?
Hi. It's not so much a question as a comment on a previous comment. The gentleman mentioned how arrowroot can make ready slimy, which it can. But if you
overused.
Want a totally grain-free alternative,
yes.
You can use besan flour, which is chickpea flour,
sure.
At 50%, tapioca starch 25%, and sweet potato starch at 25%, and it will work just fine.
So, Laura, are you gluten-free?
I'm totally grain-free. I am allergic to all grains.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's excellent. That's a flour substitute also, isn't it, for a baking flour?
It can be. There's a really good cookbook by Carol Fenster, F-E-N-S-T-E-R, about flour and other substitutions for allergy, allergic, or for people who have allergies.
Sure. Sure. That's excellent. Another thing is that you can just reduce down the stock and whisk in butter. That's very French. But you definitely are adding some calories there.
Definitely.
Gosh, thank you so much, Laura. Appreciate your call. And Nancy from Elk Creek, good morning to you.
Hello.
Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Okay. I would like to talk about a turkey, cooking and thawing.
Cooking and thawing a turkey.
Oh, thawing, yes, yes. I have to take this because my grandmother's from Elk Creek, Virginia.
You're kidding. Who is your grandmother?
I am not kidding. Her name is Beulah Ann Graybeal.
Oh, if you know you, Beulah, really?
There are your 6 degrees.
I know. Here we go. And so I think it's the most beautiful place on earth now. I digress.
It's lovely. It's lovely.
I guess.
By the way, Kendra's showing up at your Thanksgiving.
I'm coming.
No,
okay.
I'm kidding.
That would be fine. I just visited with Carolyn and Roseman Calhoun.
Oh, yeah.
Saturday.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yep, the Calhouns, that's my family.
Right.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk with you.
As I grew up.
Oh, that's just great.
Right.
Well, are you cooking dinner for the whole family?
I am. I'm having 17.
Oh,
wow. I have
wow.
an 18-pound turkey in the freezer, and I want to know how long is it going to take to thaw this turkey?
Take it out now. Definitely take it out now.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to take,
that's
especially, I think some things that people don't realize, if you bought it at the grocery store, if you have it in a deep freeze, if you're at negative 10 degrees, you're still 20 degrees just to get to less than frozen. So you want to take it out now and put it in the refrigerator and kind of monitor it because you're probably going to want to throw a brine on it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And a brine is just salt?
Well.
Salt water.
It is.
Yeah.
It's salt and water.
And
there's a lot of recipes, but and you can add. I kind of go easy, and I add pickling spice to it because it's got a lot of the same flavors that you would want, you know, in a brine. But you essentially want to use 1 cup of salt to 1 gallon of water for your brine, and then you can play with it any way you want. You want to totally submerge the turkey in it. It needs to go at least overnight. If you stick to that salt ratio, it's not going to hurt if it goes for 2 days. Once it's thawed, you want to remove the giblets and dip it in there and pull it out the day before.
And I'll echo, remove the giblets.
Right.
Okay. I think everyone has the turkey disaster at some point where they forgot to remove the giblets. So.
Right.
And that's your chance also to get a head start on stock if you want to make a stock with the neck, or sometimes also you can cut the little wingtips off. And with the necks and the wingtips, you have at least a head start on getting your gravy made.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for your call.
And how long would you cook it?
Oh, my goodness. So it's 17.
4 hours? 4.5 hours?
Well, I guess at what temperature, too? Would you be?
325.
325, okay.
I'd start temping it at 3 hours.
Yeah.
If it's completely thawed and brined, because the other thing is brining it makes it actually cook a little bit faster.
And I'm a huge fan of a meat thermometer.
Mm-hmm.
Use the meat thermometer as often as you feel you need to. Put it right up against the bone so you can get an accurate temperature, and that's a great way to not overcook it. And do keep in mind that once you do take it out of the oven, it will continue to cook for quite a while on the countertop.
Okay.
So you almost want to take it out just slightly earlier than you normally would.
Okay.
And I actually, going back to that whole puzzle and conundrum, you know, a lot of people cook their turkey for those 5 minutes of being able to show that beautifully cooked turkey and then go back and carve it. I've kind of gotten over that, and I take the legs off and cook them separately from the turkey breast, and that solves everything. And actually, I slow cook the turkey legs. I confit them and slow cook them.
But that's good stuff.
In their own fat.
Okay, so delicious. You take the legs off.
I do, and I take the legs off, and then I take the backbone off, and that way you can also roast the backbone and make the stock, and your gravy's completely done the day or two ahead of it. So I remove the top breast from the turkey. I brine the breast, and then I take the legs, and I pack. You'd have to look up a recipe for it. I pack it in salt and sugar for a day, and then slow cook it.
That's a great idea.
And serve it on the side.
Well, Nancy, I think you've got some good ideas here.
Oh, I do, and thank you so very much.
Thank you for
good
listening.
Luck.
Good luck, Nancy.
Thank you.
Now,
goodbye.
Now, let's say that folks are not as good at planning, and they find that, oh, time has gotten away. What are some safe alternative ways to defrost a turkey?
In the refrigerator.
The refrigerator is definitely the safest.
Absolutely.
If barring that, you can put it under running water.
These are all last-minute solutions.
These are all last-minute solutions. Typically, you don't want meats out of the refrigerator for longer than 4 hours in a temperatures above 60 or 40 degrees rather. So, but if you run it over the water, or some people say change the water every 30 minutes because they don't want to waste water running all the time, but that'll speed it up. And then it's as soon as it's soft enough, if you can cut it into smaller pieces, like take the backbone off and the legs, that'll thaw faster too.
And Nancy, we appreciated that question. I've heard that one of the tips floating around is to take a turkey. This is just general cooking tips with a turkey, and to roast it upside down.
Absolutely. We've been doing that in our family for a long time. Yeah.
When were you going to give it up? When were you going to share this with us?
It's a family secret. No, I think obviously a lot of people do that now, and it makes perfect sense because all of your dark meat, most of your fat and your juices and the flavors are on the bottom of the turkey. And so when you roast it right side up the entire time, the driest part of the meat, which is going to be the breast meat, is what's going to be most exposed and what is dripping down. And frankly, the breast meat doesn't have a lot to give as far as the juices go. You flip it upside down and you have all those precious juices just dripping right into the breast, and it really helps keep it moist.
We have another call, this one from Kathy from Chesapeake. Good morning to you, Kathy.
Hi, good morning. With my son today, we're both running around doing errands, and I heard your show talking about what was being done in the muffin pans. Was it the dressing?
Yes, it was a dressing, and it's actually a recipe and that's been in our family for a long time. But it's kind of just a classic recipe of a sausage and walnut stuffing. And you make it in the same way that you would make it and put it in a casserole dish or in the turkey, depending on what you decide to do. And you just pack it into muffin tins. You don't even need to use like muffin papers or anything like that. Just spray it with a little cooking spray or some butter in it. And then you really just bake them like muffins. Watch them a little bit more closely, though, because they'll cook faster. But they're really, really good that way. So just take your standard dressing and bake it in muffin tins and see what you get.
That sounds wonderful. And then the other question I had is I've always done my turkey, well, for several years anyway, in a large baking bag, one of the sealed ones that you were talking about earlier. I've never had to brine it or anything. It usually comes out brown and beautiful. I'm wondering why have mine been going right, and I've never had any concerns with dry meat or anything. I don't know why I would have to brine it like you guys were suggesting.
Well, you certainly don't have to, and if you've got a foolproof way, I would not change it, frankly. I grew up on the turkey in the bag also, and it certainly helps with cleanup as well as keeping a lot of that moisture in. Sometimes when you cook in a moist environment, the moisture actually pulls more of the liquid out of the turkey, and a lot of turkeys now that you buy have already been essentially brined. That's what a butterball is they add tripolyphosphate, which makes it absorb water into the turkey. And so you've probably already got a fairly moist turkey to start with, which is, you know, good for you, and it seems like it's working. What the brine does is it also gives you an opportunity to infuse more flavors in it. You can add really any kind of seasoning to that. Generally, it's bay leaf, onion, garlic, some sort of whole spices. And because of that exchange of liquid through osmotic pressure, it infuses it with those flavors, and as well as kind of dries the skin out, takes some moisture out of the skin, and gives it an opportunity to get crisper. So
I guess because I was thinking about buying a fresh turkey this year, and I definitely would need to brine it then. That's a good hint. Thank
you. Yeah, you're welcome.
Kathy, what are you planning to do for the Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, it was unplanned. Like one of your previous callers, I had planned on traveling, but some situations here have changed. Now I'm hosting it. So I had planned on buying a fresh turkey today from a local butcher and then using the baking bag again. But now I'm going to have to look at brining it, which I assume you just dip the whole thing in the brine and then pull it out. You're not injecting it?
You're not, but you need to leave it long enough to have that exchange occur. So for a larger turkey, it needs to be at least overnight. Sometimes you can do it in a very clean bucket in the refrigerator, or I've even bought the little plastic Lexans that they sell for packing away clothes and things and done it in the refrigerator in there. It doesn't have to be round or square, but it needs to be – well, it doesn't need to be really deep enough to submerge it totally, because you're not really worried about seasoning the back end. So if you put it breast side down, it's okay if the back is sticking out a little bit. So
okay. Oh, that's good to know.
And I have noticed that a lot of grocery stores are selling a brine mix that all you have to do is add water to. So you might consider that also.
Thank
Absolutely.
You so much.
I work a lot of hours, so anything to make this easier is much appreciated.
Have a great time, Kathy. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, you guys. Bye.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about uh-oh moments and how to fix them. Let's say you start carving the turkey and you see that there's some raw meat in there. What do you do?
I'd pop her back in. give it a little bit more time. What about
you? Yeah, definitely. Definitely you need to pop it back in. You need to sanitize the area
Absolutely.
That you're at. But, if there's a part that, say, it was the leg and you knew the breast was okay, I would take the breast off and then just put the leg back in so that you're not worried about you're not drying out the breast itself. So, and as Kendra said earlier, a meat thermometer is really your best friend. With a big piece of meat like that, there's no way to be sure.
How about dry stuffing? How do you fix that?
That's a good one. Pour a little butter on top, maybe.
How about some soup or stock or something?
I made dry stuffing for about 400 people on brunch once. No lie. Yes, I do make mistakes sometimes. And my chef saved it by folding in hollandaise that we always have a lot of for one of our classic dishes. But you're right. Any kind of fat or cream or stock with fat and kind of just redoing it. So.
And what about this one? How to keep the crust from getting soggy when you're making your pies?
Hire a pastry chef.
Right. get your grandmother to make it, to make
Parmate.
Homemade pie crust. I actually have a recipe, and it's kind of a wild recipe. Again, it's like an old family recipe, and it makes a really wonderful crispy pie crust. And it's you actually make the crust with chicken fat. And I know it sounds disgusting, schmaltz. Frankly. Schmaltz, exactly, schmaltz. But, the crispiness is obviously due to the fat that's in there, whether you're using Crisco or butter or chicken fat or lard or whatever you like to make it with. But par cooking your crust a little bit ahead of time. Obviously, you can take a fork and poke some holes in it.
What is par cooking? So, in other words, cook the crust first?
Yeah, just for a few minutes, maybe like 10 minutes or so. And you want to be careful with that because you don't want the edges of the crust to get too brown before you actually cook the pie, because by the time you do that, it's going to be burnt around the edges. One way of getting around that a little bit, if you do par cook your crust ahead of time and then put your pie in, is to line the edges with some tin foil. And that really helps the edges of the pie crust to cook a little bit more evenly with the bottom of the crust.
What about the difference between using a glass versus a metal pie tin?
Well, the metal will be cooking faster, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And even there's even a difference between shiny metal and black mm-hmm. metal, apparently. So I would look at manufacturer's directions on that. I think the glass is also going to hold the heat for longer. So you're going to need to anticipate that carryover, too, if you're looking at it visually to go into a brown.
You know, interesting that while you are going to be cooking lots of meats and let's just put it this way, breads and all of those things, non-paleo, you're on a paleo diet, Patrick.
I am. You ratted me out.
Busted.
Oh, I'm impressed.
I am. I try to eat paleo. I started trying to eat it just for health, but then I realized that I'm actually allergic to dairy as well as gluten. So, but I
right. So paleo means what things? What can't you eat?
I don't eat grains and starches, and really, that's about it. I eat meats and vegetables mostly.
What about you, Kendra?
I eat everything.
You're the omnivore cookbook writer.
I'm pure omnivore, and I'll own it.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. Find out about upcoming topics and comment on past ones on Facebook. Search for us and like us. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Virginia Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
Welcome back to Virginia Conversations. Today we're talking about putting together your Thanksgiving Day feast. Our guests are Patrick Eamon and Kendra Bailey. Patrick is the executive banquet chef of Richmond's historic Jefferson Hotel. And Kendra Bailey Morris is cookbook author, food writer as well. And I think there is an etiquette piece we want to talk about. While there might be some faux pas, there might be some disasters, never say so.
I would agree with that.
Absolutely.
Especially as a good guest. But I think that really to avoid the disasters is don't go outside your comfort zone. Not on Thanksgiving. Do it the week before. I mean, I like to eat turkey all year round. So now's the best time to fill your freezer up with it. But so play with your recipes beforehand.
So we go to Norfolk to talk to Laura. How are you this morning? Hi, Laura. You have a question about stuffing.
I do. I have a recipe for a stuffed pumpkin with a kale and kind of like a kale dressing. I was wondering if either of you have considered maybe stuffing a pumpkin with stuffing and if it would keep it moister, then because I really love stuffing in a turkey, but it's obviously a health risk. So I thought maybe you could put it in a pumpkin and then you kind of scrape the outside of the pumpkin with the stuffing and you would get it. But I've never tried it and I didn't know. Is that feasible?
It's a really good question. I actually have a recipe in my book, The Southern Slow Cooker, that is a slow cooker acorn squash that's made stuffed actually with a stuffing made of sausage and breadcrumbs and nuts and such. And that does really, really well in the slow cooker. And I would say it would do equally well in an oven if you wanted to use an oven. But the fact that it does well with an acorn squash probably means the same would go for a pumpkin or any type of squash product that way. And what I really like about it is that you kind of have the bonus. Well, obviously the presentation is pretty, but you have the bonus of having a little additional squash or pumpkin there to eat with it, which I think offsets a little bit. Say you have a sausage stuffing and it's got that kind of salty sausage in it, then you have that sweet pumpkin. I would say it would work just fine.
I think that's a great recipe. I think also you're obviously just going to serve those in the acorn squash, which would be really nice presentation-wise. But also the best pumpkins to cook with are the little pie pumpkins, and they're small. And I think you could even cut one of those in half or in a quarter after you cooked
those.
It and serve it whole. It would be gorgeous. And that way you're not worrying about scraping it out.
Thanks so much, Laura. And now we go to Monroe. Carol, how are you?
Hello.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. I have a problem in that I'm just cooking for two people.
Just you and your son?
Yes. And I was looking, and he expects Thanksgiving dinner.
How old is he?
I wasn't expecting him to come in on Thanksgiving morning on the plane. So
he's an adult son?
He's an adult son.
Okay.
I was kind of hoping I could go to a Chinese restaurant or something.
Right, exactly. That's always an option. That's always been my point.
Yeah, so I've got to. I was thinking about getting one of those little boned turkey breasts. It's nothing but meat. But yeah. I've never cooked
it's
one.
Perfect.
I think that would be great. I think you can brine the smaller pieces of meat with the same method that we've been talking about. Just you only need to leave it in a couple hours.
Oh, good.
That would be.
And it won't take long to cook either, will it?
No, it won't. I think that'd be fantastic. Or you could just stuff him with leftovers the rest of the week, which is what I do.
That's not bad.
Turkey everything.
Well, turkey is not one of my favorite foods.
Oh, okay.
And I get tired of turkey really quick.
How about a ham?
My freezer's full right now, so somebody gave me a whole bunch of venison.
I have to be
very careful about bones. Leftover meat, I have to take it straight to the dump because we have a bear that comes by and gets me.
I would go with a small turkey breast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super godly.
And you can actually do a turkey breast in the slow cooker. In my cookbook, I have a recipe for a slow cooker turkey breast that actually cooks on top of stuffing in the slow cooker. It's a self-contained meal, and it turns out that it works really well that way. So, and it's about enough for four people at most, so you wouldn't have a whole lot of leftovers.
How long do you cook it, and on what setting?
I cooked it on the low setting, and I cooked it for around 4 hours or so, and maybe 4 to 6 hours if I remember correctly. And so that's something you could put together in the morning or mid morning and have it done by the afternoon. And I'm such obviously a proponent of slow cooking. The great thing about it is it's set it and forget it. You put everything in there and you turn it on and you let it go.
Thank you so much. Good luck with everything, Carol.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Bye bye. Carol reminds me of how four of us were remaining in our family at one point, none of whom cook. And so not only did we go out to dinner, but Outdoor World was opened. And so Thanksgiving Day, so we went shopping and we had the best time. It was so anti-Thanksgiving. Carrie from Eastern Shore, how are you?
Oh, hi. I'm fine. Thanks.
Hi. What part of the Eastern Shore are you in?
I'm in Waterpreeg.
Wonderful. What's your question or comment?
Well, it's a near disaster. I had a whole bunch of people over for Thanksgiving dinner, and the turkey was cooked, and everything was cooked, and there were, millions of plates of things, and I like to make the gravy. I just take the turkey out of whatever pan I've cooked it in, and then I put the pan on usually two burners, and then I just start adding flour and chicken stock to the turkey drippings and grease.
Sure.
And so I reached in the icebox and pulled out what I thought was a container of chicken stock and started adding it to the grease. And it's like, wow, it smelled really kind of different. And it was acting really kind of different. Like pouring it in and some flour in. And I eventually realized that I had reached for a container of pineapple juice.
Whoa.
So
That's when you just add the bisquick.
So your turkey had a tropical theme going.
Exactly. And at that point, there's nothing you can do because there's not another pan full of turkey drippings. So I just got the stock and started adding flour and just beat the daylights out of that thing with a whisk.
It was good. Did everybody like it?
I was going to say, how did it taste?
It was delicious.
Excellent. Are you going to do it again this year?
Oh, no. No, because it kept almost breaking. You know, it kept breaking, and then I was able to get it back. So, no,
sure.
I'll do just regular gravy this year.
That's funny.
Good story. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing. Good luck this year. And Bill from Charlottesville, how are you? Hi, Bill.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Okay, there's two things, but I'll tell you the story first, because it was wild. We were living in Israel, and we wanted a turkey for Thanksgiving, and my wife, well, then girlfriend, and her friend went hunting, and they found a turkey, like, hanging from its neck, and bought the whole thing, head, feet, everything. And
hunting
I was
at the
living
market,
in an apartment.
Not the woods.
They were living in dorms, so they brought it to me, and we prepared it and stuck it in this oven that had no temperature on it. It just had numbers.
Sure.
And we turned it on, and then the electricity went out later in the day for an unknown period of time. And when it was dinner time, the turkey was perfect. It was absolutely
Is that
amazing.
Low and slow cooking?
That's definitely low and slow.
That's the low heat cooking there.
We have no idea. Anyway, so the other thing, the way I cook it now, I will brine it for generally 2 days. I use a cooler outside with ice in it.
Sure.
And I did this by accident 1 year. After I brine it, this was a few years ago, I smoked it for, I don't know, 4 to 6 hours.
Sure.
And I checked it about an hour before dinner and realized it wasn't going to be done.
Hmm.
So I brought it in, I let it cool for about half hour, and I cut the sucker up into all its components and put it in a large roaster and put it in liquid with, what I put in it, dried fruit, apricots, figs, some orange, and I also did, you know, had the onion and garlic and everything in it, and finished it in that, in the oven.
That sounds really good.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It had the smoky taste, and it was sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost very Moroccan inspired.
And I do that every time now.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, something you might want to try in between taking it out of the brine and smoking, you might have done this naturally, is the...
Say it again.
Your dog approves.
Good morning to your dog. The other thing that you might want to do is let it air dry in the refrigerator if you can start a day ahead of time, and that's called forming a pellicule on the outside. And what it does is it makes the outside of the turkey almost more sticky, and it'll give it a chance for the smoke to adhere better to it. So
that's
the traditional method
when you wet brine. I've enjoyed the show.
Yep. Great. Thank you, Bill. Juradine from Norfolk. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
I'm going to do a little change to a sweet potato recipe. I'm going to use the purple ones that I get from an organic source. Any appreciable difference? Anything I need to think about?
I really love those. I've found that they're slightly starchier. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yes.
I think they're Okinawan.
Oh, yeah, they are. The Okinawan.
The purple, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question, Geraldine. Are you going to make a casserole with the sweet potato? Are you going to make biscuits? What?
Biscuits.
Oh, just biscuits.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I would also recommend cooking them in the skin. If you want to maintain as much purple color as possible, you want to do that rather than cutting them and cooking them into water because you'll lose some of the color.
Geraldine, it sounds like you're giving some thought to this dinner. What else are you preparing?
Oh, we're on the economic conservative side of life. We normally do lobsters, but we're going to do a ham this year.
Oh, excellent.
And so I'm just looking for some extra sparkle because I have nothing to kill for Thanksgiving this year.
Well, I think that'll be great. Ham and biscuits.
I think they'd be really pretty, too.
Okay, thanks.
They're going to have a lovely color.
Thank you so much.
To all of you. Bye.
Same to you.
You too. Take care.
And, Patrick, that's what you suggested to Carol from Monroe, who said she didn't really care for turkey.
Yeah,
she's the first person I've heard doesn't like turkey. Michelle,
I was just going to say, I'm a huge fan of the baked ham. I love the baked ham because you always have those leftovers.
I like them both, though.
And ham sandwiches.
You got to have them both.
Oh, yeah, I know. We usually do both, actually.
Now we're getting a bunch of calls of people who don't like turkey now.
They'll be drowned out by the ones that don't like ham. Michelle from Blacksburg, good morning to you.
Hi. I just wanted to Am I on? Sorry.
Yes, you are.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to ask about using the turkey, the bones, and the all the meat that you can't quite carve off to make soup afterward. And wondering, I know what my mom taught me, but what would you all suggest?
Stop.
I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay, thanks.
Absolutely. You know that you have all the makings for a really great stock, a turkey stock that you can. You know, add your mirepoix to, which is basically your onions and your carrots and your celery, and maybe throw a bay leaf if you have some fresh herbs out there that you want to use up before it gets too cold. Some rosemary, you can throw that in there as well. I actually make my stock in the slow cooker, and it's like an overnight stock. It's super easy. You just throw all your bones and pieces in there and cover it with water, and then add whatever flavorings you want to. Turn it on low for about 12 hours, strain it, and you can freeze it or you can use it right then and there, and it's really, really good stuff. So I'm a huge fan of waste nothing.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic idea. The only other suggestion is I would hand pick as much of the meat off before you threw it into the stock, just because it's not going to be usable afterwards. But yeah, that's great. I'm going to try that in the slow cooker too.
It works really well. Yeah.
We know that Hanukkah and Thanksgiving overlap, so perhaps you have a Hanukkah meal you're working on. And we have a call from Amy from Scottsville. Good morning to you.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question. My grandmother is Sicilian. Well, she's gone now, but for decades would soak the turkey in the kitchen sink in water for over a day, as I recall, and put a towel over it so it always remained moist. And this is something our family has been doing for, like I said, decades, and I've never asked why.
Why the towel?
Well, why soaking it in the towel and, you know, not letting the top dry out? I just wondered what the benefit was.
Is she brining it, maybe?
Maybe you didn't see her add salt, or maybe also a lot of times when you soak meats, it's to remove other things. So if she was used to using, like, fresh hunted or killed turkeys, it might have been to remove further blood from the animal.
Gaminess.
With a towel, I know that traditionally koshering chicken entails covering it with a cloth and then adding salt and then another cloth on top. So again, maybe that part got missed or translated differently through history, but that's a way to add flavor.
Interesting. Cool. Thank you so much.
I don't recall her ever adding salt, and mm-hmm. we've never brined our turkeys, but now my mom and I are getting a little bit more daring and we're considering different techniques, and I just thought to ask about that.
Yeah, definitely give it a try. Just as I said, just look at the different turkeys, you know, and the different sodium content that's already added to it from the manufacturer. So, because you don't want
it too
salty. Well,
I get organic turkeys from my butcher.
Excellent.
So I don't think they've added anything to that.
Then I definitely would suggest brining it.
Thank you so much for your call, Amy.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
Karen from Williamsburg, good morning.
Well, thank you. This has been a wonderful show, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We've been grilling our turkeys for many years now. I'd like to hear your comments on grilling, and if there's time, I'd also like to hear if there's a difference between store-bought brined turkey and, well, if you didn't want to use a store-bought brined turkey, what type of turkey would you buy to brine yourself?
All right, thank you. Let's start with the grilling question.
I think that grilling is fantastic. One of the things that's necessary when you grill, at least the way that I've seen it done, is you remove that backbone and then you press the turkey breast down so that the breastbone splits. So it's almost all the same thickness. And so you get a much more even cooking as well as quicker. It almost cuts the time in half. So if you're doing that method, I think that it's probably, you know, a really great way to do it. It gives it an opportunity to kind of cook it at high heat so you can get really extra crispy, not only on the skin side, but then on the bottom side, which, you know, when you're roasting a whole turkey, that's a whole area that doesn't get a chance to add flavor to it, either from a grill or whatever method you're doing. So I think grilling, it's fantastic. And you know, definitely, if it's a tradition, stick with it, because you never know how much that stuff means to people till they don't have it anymore. So really, I would enjoy that. I would suggest either a wet rub on it with herbs and be careful with some of your
I'm sorry, things. What is a wet rub?
Like a blend of herbs and garlic and onions that you kind of smear on to the meat. You just want to be careful with the garlic because it'll burn at high heat on the grill.
Store-bought brine turkey. What do we think about that?
I think it's important to know the difference, you know, whether you're getting an all-natural turkey or a brine turkey, because the store-bought brine turkey, they almost always have a lot of sodium in them already. So if you go ahead and brine them again, you could potentially have way too much salt going on in your turkey. So just know the difference. Know what you're buying and read the ingredients.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Virginia Conversations. I want to thank our guests, Kendra Bailey Morris, author of The Southern Slow Cooker, and from the Jefferson Hotel, Chef Patrick Eamon. And thanks to you for joining in today's conversation. On the next edition of Virginia Conversations, the holiday sales are on, and so is the pressure from all those ads. We'll take a look at how your brain may be doing the shopping for you. I'm Maylily Lee. Have a great week.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.